First of all, I'd like to thank Eden for the invitation. It's so wonderful for me to have a chance to visit Pierre a second time. Today, I'd like to talk about the metal insulator transition from a holographic point of view. Basically, the content of my talk is based on our recent work, collaborating with my PhD students, Peng Liu, Chao Niu, and Zhou Yuxian. While Jianping Wu is a faculty member at Bohai University in China, Hongbao Zhang now is a postdoc in Belgium. Basically, I'd like to divide my talk into the following two parts. In the first part, I'd like to briefly review the recent progress on the construction of the holographic lattices, because I think that should be a foundation for the second part. In the second part, I'd like to basically introduce two different sorts of metal insulator transition by holography. For the first sort of MIT is based on the scalar lattices. We will construct the gravity dual model in which the translational symmetry is spontaneously broken along one spatial dimension. Also, from the gravity side, we will calculate the linear perturbation analysis. We will reproduce the frequency dependence of the optical conductivity and show that the CDW exhibits the two familiar fundamental features observed in the experiment. And then we turn to another sort of Q-lattice model, which is supposed to induce some novel metal insulator transition, which is supposed to be some sort of quantum phase transition, because we could drop down the temperature to an extremely low level, and we would find the phase transitions occur when we are adjusting some parameters in the system. However, what we intend to focus on is on the role of the holographic entanglement entropy close to this sort of quantum phase transitions. We will explain that the holographic entanglement entropy has a maximum value just in vicinity of the quantum critical points. Also, I think the time is very limited, but I still want to show a slide to addressing the issue on how to construct a holographic model-like insulator, because I think this is a very crucial issue in the current research. Okay, let's go to the first part. I'd like to give some basic review on this topic. You know, in the past few of years, there has been much progress in understanding the strong coupled condensed matter system from using the gauge gravity duality. Many interesting phenomena, including the superconductivity, superfluid, as well as non-fermion liquid behavior, have been addressed in holographic approach. Nevertheless, originally, many of these works only considered the homogeneous gravitational background, which means the translational symmetry is the system contains a translational symmetry such that the momentum along the spatial directions is preserved. If you try to calculate the optical conductivity, for example, you would find there is always a dead function at the zero frequency for the real part of the conductivity. Of course, you could not see such a dead function because this plot is just based on our numerical results. However, you could, I just want to convince you that this dead function exists here, just that you could, which is predicted by the standard Kramer-Kronig relation. If you look at the imaginary part of the optical conductivity, some divergent behavior at the zero frequency could be observed, which implies that there exists a dead function in the real part of the conductivity. Of course, this result is not desirable for the normal phase of the ordinary materials. In order to build in more realistic condensed matter system from the holographic approach, the translational symmetry must be broken such that the momentum becomes dissipative, right? So the basic idea is to introduce some lattice effects or impurities in the bulk geometry such that the momentum becomes dissipative. As far as we know, the first holographic lattice with full back reaction has been constructed in this paper by Horowitz, John Santos, and David Hong. There are some surprising results in this paper, but I think the most important thing in this paper is show that the debt function previously showing at the zero frequency can spread out such that we will obtain some finite DC conductivity. This phenomenon can also be seen from the imaginary part of the conductivity. You would find the divergent behavior of the imaginary part has been suppressed, and it goes down at some very low frequency region. I think that's the rest of most important results in this paper. Furthermore, if you just zoom out the low frequency region, you will find it is remarkable for me, at least. You could find this data can be well fit with the standard Drude formula in the standard condensed matter physics, which is a good description of the normal metal phase. So based on this fact, I think it is really quite plausible to construct more realistic condensed matter system from the holographic approach. So of course, after that work, there are a bunch of references on the construction of holographic lattices to giving such a comprehensive review on such a construction is beyond the scope of my talk today. But I'd like to pick up three typical holographic lattices to show you that perhaps is also related to the talk in my second part. So for the first kind of lattice structure, we just call it scalar lattices. Simply, we try to employ some scalar field, real scalar field in the bulk geometry to simulate the lattice structure for the dual field theory. Here in the bulk geometry, we just put some periodical functions as the boundary condition for the real scalar field here. I'd like to suggest that here we will always use this metric for the asymptotically ADS spacetime. Also in this talk, we are restricted in the four-dimensional spacetime in the bulk, such that the boundary is always 2+1 dimensions. Of course, I think all the constructions can be extended to the higher dimensional spacetime, but I'd like to just talk about four dimensions today. So the coordinate Z is just the inverse of the ordinary radial coordinates. Z approaches zero when at the spatial infinity. If we have some black hole solution, we could just adjust the position of the horizon to set the horizon position at Z equals one, okay? So this is the first kind of holographic lattices. Then the next task is just to solve the differential equations with such boundary conditions, okay? Then for the second kind of holographic lattices, perhaps we don't need any extra scalar field. We just put some periodical functions for the chemical potential directly. From the viewpoint of the dual field theory, here is the T component of the usual gauge field in the bulk. However, for the T component, the Lydian term can be understood as the chemical potential for the dual field theory. So usually for the RM black hole, this term is just a constant. However, if we try to construct some holographic lattice, we could just impose more periodical functions to here as the boundary conditions. And then we needed to solve the bulk equations of motion. For the above two sorts of holographic lattices, we need to solve the second order partial differential equations. It involves a very hard numerical calculation. In particular, in these two cases, we would find it's very hard to drop down the temperature of the bulk geometry, which corresponded to the Hawking temperature. The numerical accuracy prevents us dropping the Hawking temperature down in numerical analysis. But as I mentioned before, we need to talk about some quantum phase transition, which is supposed to occur at zero temperature or extremely low temperature. So we need to find some other extra structures of the holographic lattices. This is the third kind of holographic lattices we need to introduce, which is called the Q lattices. The key idea is proposed by Donners and Goddard in the last year. Basically, we will try to introduce some complex scalar field to simulate the scalar, the lattice structure in the bulk geometry. Here, some exponential factor appears here, but if we put substitute this form into the equations of motion, you will find such exponential factors can be read off from the equation, such that we have only the ordinary differential equations for phi, which is just a function of the z. Okay, so next, let's look closer a little bit detail for this for this construction of the scalar field. The action consists of the gravity part, which has a asymptotical ADS spacetime, and a U1 gauge field, and we will employ an extra real scalar field as the holographic lattice. Okay, so from this action, it is straightforward to derive the following equations of motion for the metric, for the gauge field, as well as the scalar field. So the next, we just try to figure out how to find the solutions of this system. When we impose, as I mentioned before, when we impose such boundary conditions for the scalar field, and we require the bulk geometry has a asymptotically ADS structure. Okay, so in this circumstance, you will find the simplest answers for the metric will be this form, involves 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 components of the metric. This is perhaps the simplest answers because all the functions now are functions of x and z. We need to find the equation's motion to be consistent. You would find the simplest answers is just this form. So also take into account the component, the time component of the gauge field, as well as the scalar field. Totally, we have 5, 7 variables for the equations of motion to solve. But the good thing is that if you notice, when all the functions equals to 1 and the other variables to be 0, you will find this is nothing but the standard RM ADS black hole solution. In this solution, the horizon is located at z equals 1. And the good thing is that we would find in the next slide, what I will just show, we will solve these equations with the Einstein-Dirac method. The good thing is that even we have some lattice structure for the background, we will find the Hawking temperature is the same as the before, because the Hawking temperature is related to the surface gravity of the horizon. If you calculate the surface gravity, you will find some ratio between these two quantities. However, use the Einstein-Dirac method to solve these equations, you will find these quantities are always equal to each other. They will cancel out when we calculate the surface gravity. So the temperature of the bulk geometry will keep the same with the RMADS black hole. That's the good things. We don't need to care about the temperature in this complicated background. Okay, I'm not going into the details to show how to solve these partial differential equations. I just list the standard steps here just to make some sense that it is possible to solve this second order partial differential equations here. The basic idea is called the Einstein-Dirac method, because for Einstein equation, we still have extra gauge degrees of freedom when we solve these equations. We need to push extra gauge conditions for these equations, which is done by adding an extra term into the Einstein equation. Here I just use some from here, GAB is just means it's all the terms in the Einstein equations. Here we add an extra term into this equation. The good thing is that after we put this extra term into the equation, we would find some extra boundary gauge conditions for this condition to guarantee. I think this is just some details in the calculation. Anyway, I would like to skip the technicals here. I just show you some solutions. We mentioned before that there are seven variables for our system, and we need to solve this numerically, 1, 2, 3, 4. And all these solutions has a periodical structure just along the x direction. Of course, in all this system, we have ignored the y direction. We suppose this direction is still has the homogeneous structure in y direction. Otherwise, it would become very hard to solve the equations.
So does it mean it remains metallic in the orthogonal direction? You impose some kind of density wave, and perpendicular to that, there is no periodic potential. So is it an anisotropic metal that you are describing?
No, along the x direction is not homogeneous anymore, because it is the, yeah, but for y direction, the is still homogeneous.
And it's metallic.
Pardon me?
Is it metallic along the direction? Because normally, if you take a metal and apply a periodic potential, you could open up a gap on some part of the Fermi surface, and a large part of the Fermi surface will remain ungapped. Anisotropic
metals.
So I'm wondering whether you have that in mind.
I'm not sure I catch you your question. Because
suppose you take the metal having a Fermi surface.
Yes, yeah.
Then I impose a periodic potential. So what it will do is it will open up black gaps.
Mm-hmm.
So it won't open up gap all over the Fermi surface. A large portion of the Fermi surface will remain intact. So it will behave like an anisotropic metal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering there.
I think in this subject, if we try to figure out the structure of the Fermi surface, we need to add some extra Dirac equations to solve and to see. We construct some fermionic holographic fermions liquid, but when we just add the holographic lattice in one direction, you would find if in the absence of the holographic lattices, On the boundary, the Fermi surface, since now we are considering 2+1 dimensional space-time, the Fermi surface is just the, it's just the, a circle. It's just for the, from the viewpoint of dual field theory, it's just a circle because we have a rotational symmetry on the boundary. And then we, indeed, we started the Fermi surface when we add one.
So you know, if I don't think in terms of Fermi surface, suppose I have some charged gas, maybe a quantum gas.
Right.
We impose periodic potential in one direction. Nothing prevents it from behaving like a matter in the transverse direction.
Right.
So that's the question. So are you talking about even in your generalized model,
I'm not sure if we could find the gap in this circumstance, but I'm sure that the shape of the Fermi surface will change. We have done some research work on this. We just try to figure out what, but I'm not sure if we could find some. Let's talk, discuss this a little bit later. I will show our work in the other paper. Sorry for that. Okay. Sorry, I think I have spent a lot of time in the, for the first part. Anyway, let's just go to the second part of my talk. I'd like to go to the real meat of my talk. Which is the metal insulator transition by holography. The first thought of MIT is we will introduce the holographic description of the charge density waves. Of course, I think many of you are quite familiar with this subject. Anyway, I just go to some basic notion about the charge CdW here. Intuitively, you just say the CdW is a periodical distribution of the charge density. However, in the condensed matter physics language, it seems that the charge density waves is a novel ground state of the coupled electron phonon system. In particular, this the generation of the CdW corresponded to the spontaneously breaking of the translational invariance. So I just show a picture, or as usual, the generation of the CdW is accompanied with the phase transition from the metal phase into the insulator phase. I just show a simple picture for one-dimensional system here. If we do not consider the interactions between the electrons with the underlying background, which is the lattices, then the charge density distributed uniformly on the lattice. Okay, so it's quite, suppose just for each atom, they offer us one free electron, then it is straightforward to calculate the Fermi momentum. It's just located at the middle of the first Brillouin zoom. This is the standard. The results for the half full field system. Okay. However, now if we try, if we, you know, in reality, there is inevitable interactions between the electrons and the underlying lattices. This shows just the very simple cases when the lattice, the atoms just move away or close to each other. The simple case is that the lattice constant becomes the twice as the previous one, such that the first Brillouin zoom just matches with the Fermi momentum. In particular, there is a gap here. So this is a typical insulate mechanical phase, since we, if we have the external electrical field in the x direction, you will find there is a current along this x direction. However, since here we have the periodical structure, this is a full field state. This is the basic picture for the generation of CDW. The next, the recent progress from the holographic side can be summarized as the following three stages. For the first stage, I mean just we need to introduce some mechanism to induce the instability of the bulk geometry. This is the crucial point. Aguri and Donners have pointed out that if we just add some extra terms into the action, typically which is topological terms into the action, you will find these terms could induce instability of the bulk geometry. But they only took some linear perturbation analysis. In the second stage, people have constructed the strict black hole solutions with full back reaction taken into account. We need to solve all the equations rather than the linear perturbation analysis. So in this, they have constructed such stripped background. But at that stage, there are still two crucial issues have not been answered. The first one is that the holographic CDW, the first one is whether such holographic description of CDW could generate the familiar fundamental features of the ordinary CDW observed in the experiment. Such two fundamental features we are always referred to as the pinning effects connecting modes, as well as the single particle, which is a gapped, single particle spectrum. The second question is that the generation, whether such generation of CDW is accompanied with the metal insulator transition. We intend to answer these two key issues by analyzing the dynamics of the CDW. That's what we intend to do next. Okay, let's just show some basic idea of how to introduce some mechanism inducing the instability of the bulk geometry. Let's consider just the standard ADS arm black hole at the zero temperature. The near horizon is ADS2 cross R2. And here is just the metric for this background. The key point is that when we do some the linear perturbation analysis, here is just this example, which is consistent. We need to introduce four components to consider together. And plugging these perturbations into the equations of motion, you would find these two quantities are not independent. We could combine this into one single variable such that we have this equation at the linear perturbation level. The key point is that if in the absence of this topological term, you mean this term and both terms are vanishing, so for this mass matrix, we will always get the positive eigenvalues for the mass. There is no stable issue for this problem. However, in the ADS2 case, there is very no BF bound for this space-time, just means the mass of the scalar field could be negative, but you cannot be much negative. It must be larger than the -3 here. However, after in the presence of such a topological term, you will find we have the extra non-trivial terms appear in the matrix of the mass. Which means when we try to figure out the eigenvalues of the mass, it could be much negative, inducing the instability of the total bulk geometry. This is the basic idea for this setup. So I just listed two ways to lead to spontaneous breaking of the translational symmetry in the bulk geometry. I just mentioned is the first approach. We could add some topological term into the action. However, there are some disadvantages in this strategy. I will not mention the detail because you could look for these answers. There is an additional term appearing for the gauge field. The Y component of the gauge field must turn on, which is called some current density wave, which is not desirable from the real materials at all. In particular, if we were find the charge density could be read out from this component directly, but in this system, you will find numerically that the charge density consists some contributions from the free electrons. So the next we intend to consider the second strategy here. We will not add some topological term into the action. Instead, we will consider the system having two gauge fields. The first gauge field corresponds to the F here. The first gauge field is to form the ADS background and the non-zero chemical potential for the system. However, the second gauge field, together with the scalar field, will be responsible for the instability of the system and the generation of the CDW. Namely, I mean the CDW in this model will be associated with the second U1 gauge symmetry here. We will talk about the CDW associated with the second gauge symmetry. Basically, we have extra terms here involving two parameters. One is the beta, one is the gamma. Roughly speaking, the first term is introduced to induce some instability for the system. And the second term is introduced here to guarantee that we could obtain some non-trivial perturbations with non-zero momentum vectors. I will just show this here. We have two parameters in this system. Okay, the first term is just to induce the instability to have a spontaneous breaking of the translational symmetry. And then the second term, we need to adjust this value to guarantee that the critical moment wave number is non-zero. Otherwise, the system is trivial. Okay. Basically, if we try to draw the phase diagram, just means here is the suppose the horizontal axis is the gamma, and here is the T, and we find the if gamma is zero, you would find such the region for the instability is just inside of the, if the critical temperature is some, this is the critical temperature, you would find if the critical momentum is zero, then the CDW is trivial. We try to introduce the gamma here, is try to find such situation. Just means we could find the critical and the critical number. We will find, the horizontal axis is the K. Yes, is the K. Yes. That's the motivation we need to introduce two parameters into the system. I don't know. I don't know if there is any. I think that's a good question, but from this action, we don't have any idea if there is a correspondence to the to the picture you know. We just add to it. It's worth for further investigation here.
Make sure you can see something within that machine.
Sure, we need to do some linear perturbations at the frost to estimate the such critical temperature and the critical momentum. Otherwise, it's very hard to find such non-trivial solutions just by numerical analysis. We have to do some numerical, analytical analysis at the frost.
About, yeah, no, but I'm saying, you check the other city. If I understood you correctly, you said you could find such temperature, you could get a non-trivial system.
Sure.
But if these parameters were too big, the whole system is going to, you're going to be in trouble.
Oh, no, here it's fine. We could choose, yeah, because this is the, we have considered all the back reactions in into the system. We find it, of course, which means that there is some fixed point of the background.
Okay, that one necessarily tell you you're in the safety. You assumed it's dead. And the dangerous ones would be that. I have no idea.
I basically just said there's no instability for this when we just adjust the value of the parameters. We find that these solutions are stable at that point. Yeah. Okay, please let me go on. Here, the uncert of the CDW can just directly read off from these solutions here. And through the numerical analysis, we will show that the charge density, the even numbers, the coefficients of the even orders are vanishing. Just means in this system, there is no electron, free electrons. The first leading contribution just from the CDW, I think that is the good thing in this system. However, in this system, there is not just a single CDW. We have multiple CD waves with the multiple momentum here. And however, the first coefficients here can serve as the order parameter of the system. When we drop the temperature below the critical value, you would find the non-zero value for the first for the leading term. Of course, we also can analyze the critical behavior, the condensation behavior near the critical point. You would find that this phase transition is the second order phase transition. Basically, we have also plotted the magnitude for rho one and rho three here. When the temperature is close to the critical temperature, you would find the magnitude of the first CDW is much larger than the second one. And later we will find this fact from the linear perturbation analysis. Just means we could find this phenomena from the optical conductivity here. But before going to the linear perturbation analysis, we just show some solutions of the background here. Notice that I've just showed the solutions of the scalar field and the time component of the gauge field B here. Notice that the stripped profile increases just when you go deeper into the horizon. This phenomenon is consistent with our linear perturbation analysis because our linear perturbation analysis shows that the stripped phases is triggered by the instability near the horizon geometry, which is the ADS2 cross R2. Just means from this figure, you understand the previous IR fixed point has been driven to another IR fixed point. In next slide, we will just show that now the IR fixed point corresponding to some insulating phase. Okay, So the last step in this part is just to do the perturbation analysis. We need to separate the variables into the background part and the perturbation part and obtain the linear perturbation equations. Ignore all the details when we try to extract the optical conductivity here. I just show the results for the optical conductivity here. This is the real part of the optical conductivity, and this is the imaginary part of the conductivity. The horizontal axis is the frequency. So from these two figures, two fundamental properties of the ordinary CDW can be observed. The first one is just the connective, is just the connective modes, which is reflected in the plug as the first peak of the real part of the conductivity. And the second one is the gapped single particle spectrum, which correspond to this second peak of the real part of the conductivity. The nice thing is that when we drop down the temperature, you would find the DC conductivity is decreased as well, which means this system has undergone the metal to insulator phase transition. So basically, you know, the pinning effect is always the normal phenomena when we encounter the interactions between the electrons with the other components like the background. Such pinning effect usually in condensed matter is described by the damped oscillator, harmonic oscillators. Here is just with the Lorentz formula. The K is related to the density number of the CDWs, while tau is the relaxation time, and omega zero is the resonance frequency. Here, I mentioned to you that in our system, we have multiple CDWs with the multiple momentum modes. So in this figure, you could find we just zoom out these low frequency region, you would find our data can be verified with two oscillator Lorentz formula here. And this is our data, and the blue lines are just the for single oscillator. Okay, let's turn to another important phenomenon in the CDW, just the single particle gap. Such a gap can be read out by locating the minimum value of the imaginary part of the conductivity here. And such gap value is comparing with the BCF mean value. This number is always a large number, but it's interesting to notice that is comparable for some real materials in condensed matter experiments. Okay, let's summarize this part. I just list all the optical conductivities for different materials in this slide. It is, if you are familiar with the construction of the holographic superconductivity, then you could understand our construction on the CDW in a very parallel way. Here, the superconductivity is implemented by introducing some complex scalar field such that the U1 gauge symmetry is broken. Here, we just introduce some topological term or the other component terms such that the translation symmetry is a spontaneous breaking. We can understand these two sorts of phenomena in a parallel way here. Okay. For the last part, I'd like to mention our recent work on the holographic entanglement entropy close to the some quantum phase transition. Okay, I think I don't have much time. Here, I just show the basic results in this topic. So we would like to introduce another sort of Q-lattice, holographic lattice, which is called the Q-lattice. Rather than the real scalar field, here we will introduce the complex scalar field into the action. Of course, we just derived the equations of motion. However, just as I mentioned before, when we suppose this complex scalar field has this form, the exponential fact can be read out from the equations of motion finally, such that all the equations motion is just ordinary differential equations. Here I show the answers for the metric as well as the gauge field. You would find there's only one, two, three, four variables as well as scalar field. So totally we have five variables to solve. But these equations, just the ordinary equations, differential equations. And typically you will find the solutions of some black hole brains can be characterized by the following three parameters. Usually, this one is just the temperature of the black brain. And we can introduce another parameter, which is the boundary condition for the complex scalar field here, which is called the, we can call this as the lattice amplitude. And the third one is just the wave number for the Q lattice. So next, when we try to understand the metal insulator, we will fix the temperature into a very extremely low value. Here we just adjust the values of these parameters. Basically, when we fix the temperature to an extremely low level, we have another extra parameters to adjust, just the lattice amplitude as well as the wave number. Then you could find for some specific values of the K or lambda, you would find some metallical phase. Just means the DC conductivity will increase when we drop down the temperature. However, for the insulator phase, we will find the DC conductivity will just drop down with the decrease of the temperature. Okay, so then we could find such phase diagram for Q lattice background. Basically, when we plot this phase diagram at a fixed low temperature, in particular, we will find such separation will not change a great deal when we still drop down the temperature. It is supposed that this phase transition is some quantum phase transition here. We are not to talk about more about the structure of the back of the bulk geometry here. I'd like to ask another question. Just what role can the holographic entanglement entropy play in this sort of quantum phase transitions? Because I think many people know that the holographic description of the entanglement entropy plays a more and more important role in current research. But from the holographic side, people have not answered this question because it is very hard to construct some holographical model for the quantum phase transition. Perhaps this is the, I'm not sure if it is the first model from the holographic side, but it is possible for us now to answer this question. This is the next we intend to do. Basically, the calculation is quite simple now. We just need to, because for Q lattice, as I mentioned before, we only need to treat all the ordinary differential equations in this subject. So let's just go directly how to calculate the holographic entanglement entropy here. We need just the, suppose we have a strip geometry on the boundary with the, in y direction, this length could be goes into infinity. We don't care about the length of in y directions. We are concerned with the holographic entanglement entropy when we change the width of the strip. Basically here we can treat the region inside this strip as the region A. We consider a bipartite system on the boundary. Outside the strip is just the region A, we call it region A. Then we ask what's the entanglement entropy between the region A and B. From the viewpoint of ADS CFT correspondence, we just claim that the entanglement entropy can be obtained by calculating the minimal surface has the same boundary with such strip geometry. Here I just show an example here. The minimal surface extends out to the bulk geometry, and at the bottom of the minimal surface is now labeled by this dot here. And then our task is just to calculate such minimal surface, the area of the minimal surface when we change the parameters in the Q-lattice system. That's the basic task we need to do. And I will not show the how to derive these formulas here. I just mentioned what we really concerned is just the so-called reduced holographic entanglement entropy, because usually when we calculate the minimal surface, you know there's a divergence. We need some cutoff on the boundary, which is the UV cutoff on the dual field theory, which is called the epsilon here. Of course, it can be integrated out. And what we really concerned is the reduced holographic entanglement entropy, which is suggested to be the degrees of freedom on the boundary for the dual field theory. Okay. Anyway, technically, we could add some counter terms into the integrand, and then we will find the integration can be performed safely from the zero. No cutoff appears in this calculation. Okay. But anyway, I don't think the technology is important here. I just show the results here. The first thing we show the holographic entanglement entropy with the length, with the width of the strip. From this figure, you will find when the width is relatively large, just means the minimal surface extended approaching to the horizon, you will find the holographic entanglement entropy has a linear relationship with the width of the strip. No matter what's the phase of, for the background, either the mechanical phase or insulating phase, this is a general feature for the holographic entanglement entropy. But next, we were asked how the holographic entanglement entropy change when we change the parameters in the system. So the first plot shows the change of the holographic entanglement entropy when we change the parameter k, but having lambda fixed. It is interesting to find that there is always a peak when we change the parameters here. And there's a similar phenomenon when we just change the parameter lambda, but have the k fixed here. Of course, we need to guarantee that such position will not change with the width of the strip. Okay, we next plot, we just show this convergence of the turning point. Just means here we just change the half width of the strip uniformly from this one. We just have, we will find the turning point is fixed at the exact value. That's interesting. Just means the turning point is independent of the choice of the width of the strip. We just need this is right, just for this one. We have the different L's here. Yes. Okay. This is the main result of our this part. You can see the green triangles are just the turning point when we change the K, but have the lambda fixed. However, the red squares are the positions of the turning points when we change the lambda, but have the K fixed. Remarkably, we just find all the turning points of the reduced holographic entanglement entropy are distributed in the vicinity of the critical points. That's the main result of our calculation. Such phenomena indicate that even in the holographic site, the entanglement entropy can be used to characterize the occurrence of the quantum phase transitions. Because I think many of us know that in the ordinary condensed matter system, when the symmetry breaking cannot be observed manifestly, sometimes it is hard to characterize the phase transitions. And people have suggested for a long time that the entanglement entropy could play a very key role in this classification. And in condensed matter system, people have done many excellent work to relating these two into together, and people find some interesting results. I think this is a seminal work by Ostello in 2002. Of course, they just find they use a one-dimensional, one-half ferromagnetic chain to show that the neighboring entanglement always have the maximum value at the critical point here. But of course, they do not calculate the entropy of the entanglement. So in 2008, some guys did calculate the entanglement entropy, but perhaps for a different system, I cannot remember exactly, but they found the entropy, the entanglement entropy do display a pronounced peak at the critical point. So, what? This one? Both minus and the positive one here for this parameter are the critical points here. I don't know why there is a minimum value for this system. Is just some parameter in this system like the lambda. Yeah. That's the critical points. That's the critical points in this system. So, sorry for. Okay, I will close my talk quickly. The last slide, I just try to understand what we have observed from the holographic point of view. You know, in the holographic site, the IR fixed point always plays a crucial role in understanding the critical quantum critical phenomena. The IR fixed point is determined by the near horizon geometry. Here, we also propose that such maximization behavior of the holographic entanglement entropy is determined by the near horizon geometry. As a result, we do some analytic analysis for the holographic entanglement entropy as well as the length of the width of the strip. You will find such asymptotical behavior when we choose the z-star, just the bottom of the minimal surface approaching to the horizon, you will find such asymptotical behavior. Of course, both of these quantities are divergent near the horizon when z approaches to 1. However, you will find the ratio of these two quantities keep finite. The half width of the strip. Sorry, yeah, yes. So analytically, we could say that when we have the parameter, the values of the parameter fixed, we will find the S is always has a linear relationship with the L. Just analytically, we have shown the first phenomena we have observed numerically, just means the HEE is always has a linear relationship with the half width once the values of the parameters are fixed. Okay, and the more important thing is about the relationship between the holographic entanglement entropy with the critical phase transitions here. We just have a contour plot for the quantity R here. Since we have the L fixed, it doesn't matter. I suggest that the quantity is independent of the choice of the L. Just let the L is relatively large. That's okay. Then you will find the contour plot for R. In this plot, we will have some bumps just very close to the trajectory of the critical points, on the critical points. And we also show some examples how to find the maximum value when we fix the K, when we just vary the parameters lambda or fix the either of them. Then you will find such maximum values are distributed in the vicinity of the quantum critical points. These results are consistent with our numerical analysis, which we obtain all the values just directly by the calculation. You will have this one. But our near horizon our analysis on the near horizon geometry shows the same picture here. And the last two slides, just use 1 minute, sorry. Yeah, next, if you look at this map, you will find that traditionally the insulators can be classified into these two categories. However, for the second category, when we talk about the insulators due to the electron-electron interactions, we always thought about the motor insulator. In Q-lattice, we have found some very interesting features, which is similar to the motor insulator. Just means when we increase the wave number, just means when we have a smaller, when we increase the wave number, the phase will be changed from the insulating phase to the metallic phase, which is quite analogous to the motor insulator. However, in this picture, I did not show the, anyway, for this optical conductivity here. Yes, there's no hot gap observed in this system. The next, we try to modify and improve this system such that we think we have some progress on this topic. We are trying to construct some model which has some hot gap in the optical conductivity. I think we are on the progress in this route. So let's summarize my talk today. I think gravity gauge duality provides powerful tools to understanding the strongly correlated phenomena, including the superconductivity as well as the metal insulator transition that we talked about today. I think we are on the road to think theoretical methods to experiment data in future. Thank you very much. Yes.
I have a very simple question. So the system, so in the holographic part of the wave, basically the system is isotropic. So you have one direction where you have modulation. is a characteristic momentum.
Right.
And the other direction system is
the right.
So you show some data about on the optical conductivity, right?
Right.
So I'm just curious whether you see any isotropy in transport. Let's say the transport along the along this characteristic momentum direction and transport orthogonal to it, could they behave differently?
We haven't checked the. You mean you need check the optical conductivity in the vertical direction, in the y directions?
Yeah.
If you do such calculation, you will find the similar problem. I mentioned in the first slide. Since there's no translation or breaking there.
I see. So if you compute transport in that direction, in this orthogonal direction, then you only see transport momentum instead of relaxation momentum.
Right, yeah. That's trivial. Yeah.
You have a dual picture. The information about the gap comes through a topological term. That's what you say. There is a, you have a U1 gauge field. Yeah. So this is topological. That's what produces insulating behavior in the dual picture. Is that correct?
Yes, but
is this something that you put by hand? Is there a rational behind introducing this term?
I think I don't know how. Yes.
You said that you can do it this way, or by introducing two gauge fields.
Yes.
That also can mimic insulating behavior.
Right.
So which one do I choose, and what is the logic behind it? Can you give some microscopic justification from electron side? Because that's what condensed matter is looking for, some clue to get hold of your theory.
I think that's a good question, but I do not know how to understand this setup from the microscopic way on the bulk geometry anyway. You know, for all this approach, we try to map all the properties to the boundary where the dual field theory live in. So,
and you also made a statement about single particle gap. Because when you say single particle gap,
right,
in condensed matter, we always think of, since you started with some fermionic system, some energy required to add and remove a fermion. So how do you get a single particle gap without any image of or any resemblance of fermions in your dual picture?
I think in general sense, when we try to figure out the microscopic structure, we need to add some fermionics, fermionic like Dirac field into the bulk geometry.
Right. But you know, before doing that, you are interpreting your result for conductivity, for example. You mentioned that one of these peak curves could be identified with single particle gap.
Right.
So how do you do that? That's what I
mean. We just read the gap from the conductivity, yes. I think it's not clear why we call this the single particle. I think it's just to have the similar features when we compare this picture with the ordinary results in this, in the standard results in condensed matter physics. But we don't have such a microscopic picture to talk about the single electrons in this bulk geometry. I think that's the general when we do something on the holographic gravity. All these fields are just the classical fields. We solve the equations of motion and use some duality to map in this resource to the quantum system on the boundary. I think it's very hard to think about in the microscopic picture here.
Because when you calculate
right.
Conductivity,
right.
I don't see any electron here.
Right, that's the general question everybody asks, you know. But yeah, I think, yeah, that's the basic question. Yeah. But I think it's good to think it your own way and how to figure out this picture is how it works from the microscopic way. Thank you. Yes.
So regarding the entanglement quantum music calculus, so
yes.
There's a Fermi surface like in 2D you expect with a multiplicative log correction to be scaling the entanglement. And you also did you see some is there a situation in your calculation where you would expect there to be a log scaling up here? I don't know if you mentioned that, if you see a log scaling with either with LY or with little L in the other direction. I'm
just asking, do you see some log
dependence
on the region A size? And is there a regime
where you expect to see a log somewhere? Pardon me, you mean the... Yes? Say again. Like, one regime of the system you construct is metallic. And I think in general, in 2D, you expect it to be like a multiplicative log.
Yes, we do these calculations based on this phase diagram, right? We can distinguish which one is the metallic phase, which one is the insulated phase, when for specific values of the k and the lambda. And of course, when we try to compare the different the value of the holographic entanglement entropy, we need to fix the strip geometry with the same width of the L for any background. For different values of the K and the lambda, we will compare the reduced holographic entanglement entropy with the same width.
So like for instance, it seems like you're subtracting out something like this non-universal.
Sure. This is the same. This is the same for all the, yeah, right. I think this part is the same for all the strip geometry. When we subtract, there's no difference.
So
yes.
You need to be careful about,
right. So.
You subtract out, you have to correct dependence on LY.
Right. I mean, this part, the divergent part, is not important. The important thing is how. What's the difference between these? Yes.
I have another question. So you mentioned that we want to study a holographic superconductor. We introduce a complex field, and that's because superconductivity is basically a spontaneous mode symmetry, breaking of a U1 symmetry. So here we have a charge density wave. You're breaking translational symmetry to its breaking the transition symmetry, but you still have some discrete. So in some sense, the superconductivity and charge density wave are dual each other because when you're deep in those symmetry breaking phases, they are described by the same order parameter. So in the superconductivity, you have phase, and in the charge density wave, that's basically the cosine of the transitional over this subgroup.
There are a lot of similarities between these two pictures,
yeah,
but yes. But they don't have the same order parameters in this scenario. And I not mentioned that they do not have the same order parameters. Here, I did not show the slide on the solutions for the scalar field. Because for the scalar field solutions, we could still expand the solutions for the scalar field into the Fourier series. And the leading term is the order parameter for the superconductivity corresponding to the generation of the Cooper pairs. However, the subleading term is just you can treat the subleading term of the scalar field as the order parameter for the CDW anyway. Just basically, these two pictures have a different order parameters in this scenario.
Right, but we are deep in those metric breaking phases. I would expect that. I mean, from numerical point of view, I would expect that. By a very similar inductive field theory. But here it seems to be that in
Yes.
So for instance, if you want to build chart interface, you have to use some topological terms.
Right. Yes, that's the difference.
So if you have any intuitive explanation why we need the topological term to get the chart interface?
No, because it's not necessary. I think this is just the one of the approaches we could do. Yeah, as I mentioned, the key point is to induce the instability of the near horizon geometry, which is the ADS2. It doesn't matter which kind of instability you could introduce anyway. Just the first method, we could introduce some topological term here. But I don't know if there is any some deep reason for this method. When we find it, based on my understanding, is the key point just in, sorry, the key point is this. Yes, it doesn't matter what kind of terms you could introduce. The key point is we need to make the ADS2 near geometry unstable in this term. So you mathematically you can find this is just this term, you would find the contribution from this topological term. However, of course, we can add the other kind of terms into the action, just as we have done for the second case. You would find this term would play the role in inducing the instability for the system. I don't think there is any deep reasons behind this topological term here.
All right. Well, thanks again for the call.
Thank you all. Thanks.